Thank you, Chair. I get to the last part of the question now, I'm sorry. Does the department have an exit strategy? In other words, do they have a management plan as to when they hope this enterprise is becoming self-sustainable? Thank you.
Thank you. I'll answer the question from the first speaker, but I also want the managing agent to explain how long it specifically responds to the services. I'm not working from the phone so much. Here, the first question was on the client was reduced, it's right. What it was about, as I explained it in my presentation, here is that in the previous 2 years, capital for the erection of the service in the 1.8 million was included in the transfer. And that budget has been benefited. Indeed, to the current financial year, it's only the 100,000 that is to be for capital this year. Next year, there will be no capital augmentation, so it will again be lower than in the current financial year. Standard budget for the farm over a number of years here was roughly 1.5 million. Given the increases from a wage point of view, it should be now, and I'm talking the last 10 years, it should not be more than 1.8.3, but the zero base without any capital again. I think that answers the question. What the statement was made, this is a loss-making institution that is quite right here. I think again, maybe I should go back to the beginning. Neha Farms comes from 1983-84, as I saw, registered here, but it was done as a government development agricultural project by the game department of development. The land was bought, et cetera, at that stage. And they done it, over there, what happened there, I don't know. But in 1993, when the development aid was closed to the department, all these projects that were alive, if I can call it that, at that stage, were transferred all over the place. And the Department of Agriculture in 93 received the agricultural development project, specifically NEHA. And like I've already mentioned, something like Whittlesey. So it was a project that was all the years funded by government, and then it went through the whole process in line with the National Department of Agriculture. So the reason why we kept it on is if you look at the Peach Beach environment, the community where this company is settled, it's a poor rural community. The farm is managing something, like for instance, an area where they sell their pot to that community. This is more or less nothing other than over the years than the community service in that specific part, the little economy on its own. And we've kicked around over the years, should be closed down, should not close down. In the portfolio committee, I've made the statement that government should get out of this project, and I was pretty shocked, very honest. It won't survive if we as government get out of it. My idea here, from what I'm saying, being a finance guy, is still to get the service center self-sustained, that it can run on its own, and then we as a government get out. That's still what I'm working towards. But keep in mind, we've only now finalized the service center. There was a farmer that was sitting, what, 2-3 months ago on this, and the question was asking on the number of hectares, it's 4,800 hectares. Now nine has already been established on this land. All that we get out of this of the settlement project was Lotham Home Farms, and that is where the service center is situated. Now we bring on this for Luca specifically as a spokesperson from the farmer side with the idea, and as I said, we are now working on how are we taking the service center principles in helping this new farmer getting their farms up and running. That we have to do, that's the next part, the most important part of what we are doing. But the idea is still at the end for the farmer, well, at least from where I'm standing, for the farmer to manage this service center as their own without government being part of it. But let the government then get out of the exercise now, so we drew the 1.5 on them, more or less that we were that we paid for the managing agent to run this on an annual basis. I hope we will get started to because the farmers are still new. We only now reach the point where you have farmers that you can actually serve. We also serve a community, Sammy and those guys can give you more detail on that than I can, but the community surrounding the farm with lots of communal farmers, etc. The plowing is what we call it here, and the Matter Food Project, it's a private sector initiative, it's not a government initiative. What they do is they contact NEHA Farms to do the plowing, we charge them full recovery because we have our taxes, our people, community, but this organization fight, not a community, the community of Yuba activists that has been declared for them to form on. That's the type of services that we want to render. And like I said to you, we want now a working relationship between the civil farmers on their farm and the civil center. How the civil center can support them to make the success of the whole idea of their own farming specifically. Yeah, this is not very broad, but I think this talk, again, from where I'm standing, this talks to the whole idea of Mecca Pharmacy, the Royal City. We are there to help each other. We also have a big water camp near the farm. We have a number of communities that get the postal services from us to get legal advice. We're not attorneys, we do not render legal services, but the advice part of it, the postal services, etc. I think I wanted to ask Tony to do some research on it, just a little bit on the services that we are currently doing in the country.
Chair, sorry. Sorry, just on a point of order. I'll ask follow-up questions later, I know. But is it loss-making institution because the managers are driving BMW
3 SEIs? I'd like to respond to that one, too. This company, I'm now working at Nepal, on and off since 1996. This is the only company in the, or let's call it a public entity, where no director or chairperson or board member has ever received one cent. Not one cent. NECA has not paid a director of this company one cent since I was part of the director. So the BMW on that board is not supported.
It's
that
dream car. Is that dream car? Once they get there, they will have the three of them. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members. By the way, I drive a 17-year-old machine. So, according to the question, the legal services that we give, certify, I'm a justice of the peace, and I certify documents. I assist the people there, especially with letters to home affairs, because that seems to be a daily thing. When there's problems with home affairs, I assist them with the writing of the letters, sworn affidavits, that kind of thing. If settling minor disputes, I work very closely with the traditional leaders in that area, and we settle minor disputes. If there is a complicated issue, these are rural communities, poor rural communities. We have a couple of 10 lawyers in town, and I phone them up, and they assist me with giving legal advice when it's necessary. You ask the question, who benefits? It's the entire community, and that entire community is, I don't know how well you know the area. I know Chief Polomita knows the area as well as I do. It starts from Kiefu, where Chief Makinana also comes to us for assistance. We've often gone there and given him advice. I should imagine our area embraces in many ways not only the Neha area, which is about 14,000 hectares, including about 10,000 hectares of Chiefness Jongilanga, which is a community that we actually did the planning and settlement for. But our reputation is such that we get people from all over the world. We've even had people come to us from the front side, especially for training. Our training right now is constrained because we don't have the trainers, sufficient trainers in place. But we have advertised, and as of the 1st of January, we will have a highly qualified agricultural advisor who will actually be able to go to the farmers on call, also train at the training center, farmers, and on the little research station that we intend to start there. That is why we don't have the tunnel. And also, we will employ, as from the 1st of January, in fact, we're busy now doing the shortlisting and interviews of a highly qualified instructor, agricultural mechanic with instructor qualification. So he will also be able to assist the new farmers, as well as the surrounding farmers, with preventative maintenance, how to do their own repairs, and at the same time, we will be able to do on a cost recovery basis, repairs for the farmers. Then the question was asked with the livestock. We also have a beef herd, which and as well as a dairy herd. Both these herds are used as well as for revenue generating, income generating. They're also used as part of the training services. I think one must realize that a lot of these costs, let's call them social costs. There are a lot of costs which are not profit-taking, they're social costs, because that's basically what we're there for. Then another question was asked, of this villages, village 1 and village 8 are villages in the Nibishagi area. That's my question. For those who know the coastal area and the type of soils that are available at the coastal area, which is a known fact according to the Soil Conservation Act, that only 30% of the land of any farm there is suitable actually for plowing, because either the soil type or the slope, etc. And the rest is suitable for grazing. So, in our development of the farmers, we will show them how to do proper land layout so that there's no erosion. Soil recovery, that's also going to be part of the services. It already is, but we are going to implement it more strongly. And at the same time, how to improve their grazing, clearing of alien species, proper fencing off so they can have proper livestock rotation system. Chairperson, I don't think there's any other unanswered questions.
General mentioned the beef herd, but not numbers. What is livestock, large crop unit numbers in the beef herd?
Mr. Ware has made the point that they find it necessary for this project. Well, I think I imagine that is very good because the black time to help the government get out of this immediately would be a situation where this project would not be sustainable. But what I'd like to know is how much time do you have to ensure that this project is run by each and each other? For instance, the kind of services that you are providing to the community. Do you have any people that are paying, like the kind of legal services you're talking about, preparing affidavits and things like that? Do you have people that are paying so that they can take over? In fact, almost everything, and any of these services that you're providing, do you have people that
yeah, thank you. Just to follow on Honorable Lolovich, I think colleague Botha asked about an exit plan. Can we be favored with the thinking of the board and the department on an exit plan, together with time frame, so that you know we as a committee can continually assess the performance and see whether they are meeting the particular time frame. I'm also concerned, Chair, about the 44 workers that are there. I mean, are they employed by the company? Are they government employees? What happens to them, their rights and things like that? And what about the local authority? We heard that the department, Eastern Cape Department, don't want the baby. They're just throwing the baby away. They want national department to manage it. What about the city? Couldn't the city say, let's take this over as our project and continue to get funding elsewhere to sustain it in the future?
This is a hamlet. I thought everybody was welcome. And one side of it. One question?
I wanted to know in relation to the new farm, what should this change in the city? Thank you.
all the follow-up questions from the another person.
I think what
you've
made
sometimes
here is a committee to understand some of the potential, understand what you get from there. The father is so disgusted. He had some understanding of what he was going to be the doctor. Now that it is on and working, you have 50 people that go to do this too. You know, the training and it doesn't put good on the training. Because you can train and train and train and train, the people still are mad, still have hungry, still doesn't help. You don't want to know the actual difference this project has made on the lives of the people. That's what you want to do.
Yeah, the impact analysis of this. Perhaps this person has to much more of a problem.
Thank you, Jay. Sorry, I thought in the following question the answer would become immediately the number of the details. But I'll make an effort.
A few conclusions.
Pardon?
A few conclusions.
Yes, yeah. But it doesn't matter because I can make an assessment from the inventory. From the inventory, where the from last year to year ending 2007, I see the commercial livestock, which I assume is a beef herd, has increased from 244 to 340,000 runs in inventory, whereas daily herd has decreased from 536 to 427. But let us assume from this end that the beef herd is also approximately 100 large stock units. In which case, I don't understand why, in an area of a high rainfall like that, the stocking rate is in about 20 hectares to a large stock unit, which is extremely low. It should be in the vicinity of 3 to 4 hectares to a large stock unit. And in a very long, low stocking rate like that, why is the seed cost 5,000 bucks? The dairy cow, because I assume that in a situation like that there will not be no feeding of the beef herd. Or is there feedlot on the farm, which I don't see in the report, in which case there would be feed for the beef herd. But if we assume that the feed is only for the dairy cow, then why is it $5,000 per cow, which is daily high, because all the cows are in lactation at all times. And then, as a last question, is the farm enclosed? There was a reference made to fencing. Is the farm in place already fenced into camps to allow rotational grazing, or is that not yet taking place? Thank you.
Okay,
yes.
That is
the last question. Thank you, Chief. Okay. Can you please respond to the question on the livestock as well as the other question?
Yes,
sir.
In response to the, I think, none of the members, Mr. Bhutta, have got a complete picture of the capacity, the carrying capacity in that coastal area is actually much higher than what you stated. But the area available to us for grazing for the dairy herd is only 65 acres. The coastal area is not a high rainfall area, as you stated. In fact, I can give you figures. This has been one of the driest years we've had for about 20 years. In fact, since May this year, we've had very little rain. Despite what it shows, a bit of forecast, it doesn't actually fall where we are. I can give you the numbers of the dairy animals, the total, including cows and calves, is 176 animals. And the beef animals, we have the herd now stands at 94 animals. We don't feed the beef animals at all, but we have to feed the dairy animals, otherwise they wouldn't survive. For a long time we were able to bale grass from surrounding farms, the farms that in our area, but the actual area where those dairy animals are actually grazing is 65 acres. We have Kikuyu pastures, but unfortunately, with the extremely dry weather conditions, Some of our boreholes have dried up, we're not able to irrigate, and they're totally dependent on them. I don't know if that answers your question.
I don't understand. You say snow has. What is the mean rainfall for year then? What is the acknowledge that the probability of the that area?
And I still don't understand why only 65 acres are available for grazing and there's 4,800 acres, of which only 80 are plowed. Then there's 4,220 hectares still remaining.
That land does not belong to us. That's not belong to us. 4,800 acres is what I check for the help on CYLTV. There's no other land available to the company. In the meantime, there are 8-9 farmers that have been settled on that land. All that has been kept out is really well, and that's about what's for me.
And welcome home.
Welcome home.
And
we
really have a 16
acres. And really, this chairperson, if wants to, we clear a piece of land where we want to put a tunnel to help with the cash flow of the company, etc. But, it's not our land anymore since the city. And by telling the people for his partner, well, since earlier this year, he wasn't laying on this farm. That's why the way the sea cost was so high. And at the moment, we already start seeing the wind. Because now the land is for 3 times the city.
And this settled so much. What are the criteria? They settled so much on the farm. What are the criteria?
Okay, I'm not going to respond to that. Let me tell you why I say I'm not going to respond. Settlement of farmers is specifically the Department of Agriculture's responsibility. NECHA board, myself and the board members, is totally outside of the criteria of the process of the advertisement we're giving specifically to prevent anybody stating that we know farmers have been gone to take people to that specific day. I was totally out of it, but I can ask you to perform a license from the department side on the process and the criteria you can respond to the question.
The criteria that we use for federal farmers in Europe are the same criteria that we use for federal farmers in Finland. We advertise the properties, we treat the amount. The farmers are shortlisted and there's a committee that speaks to treat all the applicants to interview them, looking at their experiences, whether they are staying on the farm, and several other things. And fail the screening committee decides when the farmers will be after the property. So it's a long and transparent process that we follow.
So I'll tell you about the process, not the criteria.
The criteria is the experience, one of them, whether the person understands what he or she wants to do on the farm, because you will need to indicate exactly what you want to do on the farm. When we advertise the property, say, we advertise this property in the street and we encourage people to visit those farms even before the closing date of the application. So that when we interview them, we ask them exactly what it is that they want to do amongst other things. So that we avoid people who will be applying dry land for instance and say I want to do fish farming. I'm just giving I'm dramatizing more, but to say, is this what you want to do? Suitable to the area that you apply. That's one of the most important things that we.
But that is information that we can get from you. You are not yourself.
No, we are not.
How do I know? If you're just advertising and applying and advertising, how do I know what is suitable or not?
No, that's why I'm saying we advertise, we will give them the information, and you can go there. If you don't apply, that is very cheap. So we didn't know what it is that we want to do on the farm. And you have all the time. Applying for any position, even if it's okay, you have to do some research before you go for the interview. To say, is this the area that one can do what I want to do?
Can I do another follow-up question? On land affairs, there are three important programs, the air restitution, redistribution, and the internal security of change. Now, what I wanted to find out was whether the settlement that we are talking about is it under the redistribution.
Yes, when we talk of, okay, there are three land form problems, as you rightly restitution, tenure reform, and redistribution. And in redistribution, that's when we have problems like elements. And we also have state land disposal, which also forms part of redistribution. When we redistribute state land, one of the main things that we look at is one, if there was a farmer on that farm for some time, when the property is at the site, irrespective of any other criteria, if the farmer already has rights on that farm, that is taken into consideration, that where the issue of tenure reform will come, then it will be land reform but addressed by tenure reform. So the farmer will be allocated that property because of the fact that the farmer is on the farm for long. And that way the Department of Agriculture will make it a point that even if this farmer does not understand exactly what needs to happen, they will have to assist the farmer to be sustained with the farm. But on unencumbered state land, where there was no one, where there are no rights issues, that's where we are looking at this other criteria, more especially the economic aspect, because then you don't have the social part, you know, in terms of rights and all those things. So where you had people sitting, occupying the farm, those will be allocated irrespective of the property. So it's neither here nor there. In terms of land reform, it's either to redistribution or tenure reform.
It may not be here nor there, but in this instance, what is there?
Mm-hmm.
Are these farmers leaving this land? Are you giving it over to them? Are you selling it to them? That's the basic question that I can ask.
The farmers are currently there on a lease basis. There were some properties which had tenants already. Those were not handled through this process, because those are the issues of rights, and those will be allocated to the farmers.
And how long is the lease?
The lease that we give on state land, it's 3 years with an option to take it, but it's up to the farmer if he or she wants to exercise the rights. But with the farms that we are talking about now, we still have to go through the process of getting the approval through the government process, because in terms of the delegation, the farms in question are under the Ministry of Public Works. What happens is the committee that sits in the province to allocate those properties will make recommendations to the Minister of Agriculture and Land Affairs, and the Minister will recommend to the Minister of Public Works. So that process is not yet finalized. But the farmers has been allowed to occupy the farms now.
Okay. Mr. Kota Mankula.
There's a question on the issue of leasing.
No, Mantuzi.
Sorry.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think, Chairperson, we need to come back to this issue of distribution of land, as Umaba Umalati is indicating here. It's very problematic. When you talk of leasing land, if you have a 3-year lease, it's very difficult to get finance on that particular project, because no bank can guarantee you a loan. When your lease is equal to 3 years, too small. I don't know, Chairperson. I think you have to look at the criteria that you are using and try to change that. Because really, if you talk about 3 years, they will never be sustainable, and they'll never get a loan anywhere unless the loan is given to a farm or somebody else on behalf of the farmers. I don't know. But really we need to look into this matter.
Mr. Bottom.
Okay. As far as
far as the human land is concerned, the rental rate, is the rental rate market related? And if it's not market related, what is the rental? And how is it determined by the department? And to what program is that income mitigated? What is it used for? Thank you.
Thanks. Okay. The question by Manji, the late figure of 3 years, we're saying it's a lease with an option for patients. In fact, with the understanding of what is being experienced by our reps, maybe less from us, if I would come with my own personal needs, even encourage them to buy or encourage farmers to leave. Because as an emerging farmer, you start and you want to use all your capital. You use the money to buy land, then you don't have money to do the operation. Even though we are saying it's lease with a 3 year lease with an option to buy, but if a farmer comes the following day and says, "No, I want to exercise my option to buy," the farmer is allowed to do that.
If he doesn't want to buy?
If he doesn't want to buy, he can live for 3 years, and if he still wants to continue living, he can continue the lease for a further 3 years. Or he can continue living throughout.
No, but this conservative approach is not acceptable.
The approach is merely to assist them. But if they want to take long-term leases, they can do that. Because if it's 3 years, this is an option to buy. After 3 years, you can extend your lease.
Why don't you give them long-term leases and with an option to buy at the expiration of that long-term lease? Then he said yes.
There's just some problem with policies. You can go up to 9 years. I think it's 9 years, 11 months. You can do that. That's the longest you can go. But
why can't we do it in the future? So the police are not like a pilot, they're not. They're human beings, they're artificial.
No, we can look at that, but as I'm saying, I wouldn't see any difference, because I know most of the major banks take the lease agreement from government, the 3 year lease period, because within the lease itself, there are clauses which guarantee the security of tenure for the farmers. So there's no reason for financial inflation. It used to happen when it was a 3 year lease, but now that we are seeing 3 year leases with an option to buy, financial institutions, as far as we know, are no longer giving farmers profit.
But listen, I think if go and look at the act itself that governs this lease that he's talking about. Because really, when you are farming, you only make your profits after 5 years of farming. Now, if your lease,
if you are very lucky,
also, you can make.
Yeah.
Now, how is that particular person going to buy that land? Because he wouldn't have money by then. After 3 years, no, there's no money to buy that land. So, to me, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't promote sustainability, and it doesn't have a positive impact on the life of the people themselves. It creates more hardship than a better life. So we need to go back and relook at this thing and say, what is it that we can do to assist these people to sustain themselves?
So we must let's close this issue. Unless it is not closer than us before I
leave. You have not chosen any mark. There was a question on exit strategy. Let's be honest, we do not have the exit strategy. What I said earlier is that at this stage we want to work out the, I don't know what to call it, but the intermediate between the Neho Farm, the company, and the central farmers. How do we then support each other, etc. And I think what one can do, we'll report back to the committee in March, like I said, that we will take it, your exit strategy will also be part of the sustainability of the farm, for instance. So there's a number of issues. Except that the committee tells us that the government has to get out of it. And I'm telling you, saying to get out of this project fund. Because there's no sustained capital at the moment. The idea is to get it at a sustainable basis. And that's what we want to try to do by tunnel farming, by training, etc. Here and ma'am, excuse me, I'll miss your question. Can you just repeat this, please?
Sorry. I
certainly
listen to the you mentioned on page 13, point number 7, you talking about the receivables. And on those receivables, there are paid receivables. One would like to know exactly what are these paid receivables. Thank you.
Dear person, those receivables for the past 2 years was indicated as a zero, because other than selling of milk, we do not do business at a farm specifically, like I've explained earlier. So we was here for the past 2 years. The other receivables is more like interest and some capital investment that the company has that's already part of the maintenance.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
The question was not answered about the rate of the meat.
The question by Honorable Group on the rental rate, the rent we use is 10% of the value of the property. If a property, for instance, is 100,000, so say 10% of 100,000 divided by 12. Then we use that agricultural potential, not market.
At the moment, what was the actual, as an example?
It's not an abstract. I'm saying it's 10% of the value of the farm per year.
Yes. Say to me, this farm, this farm in that case, it's very expensive. Okay? And this farm I was using it, this is 10% divided by 12. Pick up one example.
That's why I pick an example of 100,000, of a farm of 100,000. You say, what is 10% of 100,000? It's 10,000. Yes, so we do have small cushion that goes for even less than that.
Okay, it has no meaning if we say a farm. The farm can be 1 hectare or 300,000 hectares. You must have the rate per hectare. What is the land, that land valued at per hectare? So we know what is the rental per hectare. That is how all agriculture is handled.
The value per hectare depends on the agricultural potential, as I said. The value per hectare in Eastern Cape may not be the same for a farm in the region. Even with Naiha farms, those portions are not in the farm. We have a list of the portions that have been allocated with their values. They are not the same.
And I'm saying, you cannot say pick out an example, for us to have a concrete view of what they're doing.
Mr. Spedone, if you can take one of the property, but I have the file here with me.
Chairperson, before the farms were advertised, at the request of Mr. Malachi's office, an evaluator was appointed to value all the farms. Now, those farms, they differ from pure grazing to pineapple farms, to small irrigation properties. So it's very difficult, unless we actually bring the valuator's report, to actually say to you that there is a... But each farm was valued by a valuator, was correctly done, depending on the assets on the farm, whether they were buildings, what the handling facilities there were. So they all differ in actual value. But we could bring the next meeting.
But you must know that this farm, out of, the 17 that we had, one of them, its value is so much, and it's composed of so many hectares, okay? And all the issues that are considered when you do your evaluation have been considered. We know those kind of things. Tell us and say that plan costs so much, all right? And as a result, this farmer who set up there is paying us this much money. That's all I do. But if you don't know, it's fine.
Could you have the answer in writing as soon as possible so we can have it by next week's meeting, please?
But Mr. Malaga has given you an opportunity every time. You don't need to answer.
No, I just wanted to say I have a list of all the projects that have been allocated here. would there be? If
we
from two pushing two farm, it's selling at 88,000.
I am a list of all the coaches that can we run the coaching?
Members, I don't know, we won't have time for this. But quite clearly, this issue needs to be resolved. We need to have a much more productive engagement on this. When I went through the report, it looked quite a simple thing to do. But I see that there are more problems than look, I don't think the community is saying that we want an exit strategy from you. But the community says, what is your plan? What is your plan? And the sense is that it's like we want to dump this farm. That's why it's written in the farmers give them 3 years leave and pull out. And I'm saying, let's have present to understand about this farm. What are your plans about this research farm? What is the end game about researching this farm as well as that? Are the chemistry variable? If you can correct that fundamental issue, I'm sure the committee can. You can then say to you, yes, you're right, you can exit. But this is a full segment support that says,
thank you. As far as the three leases of optional purchase, etc., as far as that is concerned, I would recommend the committee to talk to the National Board of Agriculture, not the National Farm. We are the agriculture support. We're not part of the policy of the federal farmers, how they do it. Strictly something. And from day one, I've kept the report on radio because of various reasons, out of that exercise. But it's a part of agriculture now to just to excuse all the acts that we are wearing. But I would then prefer that the committee discuss specifically with the part of agriculture and the part of land affairs as far as that is concerned.
But we'll do that. We'll do that, but also they'll have to be informed by your thinking. But you see, the irony of it is that you are the CEO of Pakistan. It may be convenient not to want to respond on behalf of the department.
As far as the land policy is concerned, for the land policy from Program 2 in San Malachi, it's not
true. I think you are right. But when they come back, they must tell us whether the project addresses the social human rights issues, because that's what we want to know. We want to see whether it has got a negative or a positive impact on the lives of the people. That is what we want. And with the list that is looking for, I see still looking at the list that must be given to us. Maybe if he hasn't got it yet, they must send it to us so that we look at the list. And as he has indicated that if it's 100,000 rand, 10% of that money is payable a year. And if I look at 10% of 100,000, it's 10,000 rand. I'm worried that that person might not even make that 10,000 rand a year. To me, it doesn't make sense. If you say 10,000, then just that come out clear to us, whether it's 10,000 rand or according to the figure that you've given to us, so that we know exactly or how much the people are paying. Is it feasible? Are they able to pay and live on that particular piece of land, or is just another type of impoverishing people further?
You see, numbers, let's do this issue. I think what we also need to do is that when they come back, we must have two, three of those resettled farmers. Just to have a sense of, you know, what the difficulties are. We'll have to choose them out of the legal committee. Not ourselves. Yes, we'll have to choose out of the list that they're going to give us, not them choosing for us. Yeah, we can greet them, you know. Yeah, we can greet them. So otherwise, Raymond, thank you very much. You may not have done this.
Yes,
but quite clearly.
Yeah, I know you want to close.
Yeah.
But I don't know if the counselor can earn a salary. Does she have anything to say? I don't know if you don't know anything from the counselor from Buffalo.
No, he's gay. Oh, yeah, you know, counselors earn more than members of parliament.
No,
it's not everybody. Yeah, so that's all about it. So that's how I'm saying we need to bring those comments.
Thank you, Chair.
I think Thank you very much once more for affording us this opportunity to come to this conference. I must, on behalf of the other board members that are present here, as well as His Majesty, express the gratitude the board gets from this committee on an annual basis through its vigilance, oversight, and reforms that on a regular basis we try to improve our performance. As a starting point, Chairperson, I want to introduce my colleagues with me today. It would be noted from the presentation mostly on the screen that I'm the acting chairperson. The reason for that is that His Majesty is the permanent chair of this board. As a consequence, I have at his leisure as an acting Advocate Robin Hines is one of the board members. sitting across from me, down to the corner there. And next to him is Amin Mia, who is a full-time staff member of the Secretariat and responsible for financial matters. On my right is Mr. Tricky Brook, who is also a board member. Behind me is Mr. Chris Aitken, who is the member of the Secretariat responsible for the United States, and is also the acting head of the Secretariat. Before you, Chairperson, and the honorable members, I've got three sets of documents. The first one is our annual report, with a theme of blue baskets all over. And apart from it, I've got a document which is entitled annual report, which is a summary of that. And the last document that has just been circulated now is a postscript, for want of a better word. In other words, after the Auditor General has made observations, qualified us, what steps did we do, did we take, and what is the state of play as we currently talk. So in a nutshell, there is a great overlap between the two documents, or the three documents, say that each one tries to explain the other. But they are all flowing from our annual report. Without further ado, Chairperson, I will start with the very document, which is the presentation for today. I do not intend spending much time on a number of pages there, because I know that you've got business to do today, and also there are questions to be asked in the course of time. Suffice it to say the following, that in the first page, or page two rather, we just give a background of our land ownership to note that we are the registered owner of at least 2.7 million hectares of land, which is occupied. And the land is owned on 11 district and metro municipal areas. And then, based on the Bureau for Statistics of 2001, we say the estimated population was just over 4.5 million. On page 3, once more, we see the background of how this board came into existence and the enabling act which binds the board, and what the core business of the board is. The core business of the board is derived from our mandate from the act, and then we also state what our vision is and what our objectives are on page 3. And then on page 4, we begin to talk about corporate governance and the structure of the board. And this is on page 2 of the annual report. We make the point that the board has three critical management structures, and then there are other subsidiary structures which in total would make them 5. But the critical one is that the executive authority of the board in terms of the GMFA is the Honorable Minister of Agriculture and Land Affairs, and that the board came into existence after the amendment of the Act, but the land that the board is managing is owned by a trust, which is called Ngonyama Trust, with His Majesty as the sole trustee. We then have an audit committee, as well as the board's function is that of an accounting authority, and that the day-to-day functions of the board are looked after by the Secretariat, which is the permanent structure of the board. And then had received here. At some stage, we will be talking about the granting aid. The purpose of the granting aid is to meet all the administrative costs of the board. And the operational costs of the board are met from the 10% of funds going to the fund. Then, those administrative costs, of course, are the costs that are voted through by the national parliament. Although this is a provincial trust, but because it owns land which is a national competence, it is hence accountable to the national minister as well as the national parliament and hence the committee. On page 5, we elaborate as to what the day-to-day functions of the secretariat are, which are overseen by the board. That would consist of the real estate administration and general administration, financial management, and also we've got divergent portfolios with regard to our land. Our land consists of residential land, agricultural land, game parks, conservation areas, forests, woodlots, state domestic, mining, and commercial development, such as shopping centers, hotels, industries, housing projects, agriculture farms. I think I need to emphasize what we mean by state domestic. State domestic means all properties which are used by various government entities, departments to execute their functions, like clinics, police stations, schools, depots, and similar institutions. That is just by way of that. And as we go further, we have now explained the land, the size of the land that is currently registered in the board in the trust name and what the secretariat does. And then we now take you through, because one would say if you own 2.7 million hectares of land, you've got this vast land, what have you doing with it? That is a misperception, because although the land is registered in the name of the trust, but the land is heavy populated. It's the land which in other provinces, elsewhere in the country, like the previous entity that was there, was the land from Dorsal background, which was called, which was set aside for Africa people under communal settlement, with the structures of administration being traditional leadership. Historically, prior to the homeland establishment, it was called Native Trust, it went to South African Development Trust, it went to homeland, and consequently, the board is the successor in title to the former Western homeland. And therefore, that is the amount of land that we own, which was either in the hands of the Western government or currently in the South African Development Trust, or earmarked for homeland consolidation. One of the difficulties among the traditional leaders is that they are not capacitated to manage land, which is a bigger stock. As a result, if you come to any communal land, you will find that there are many people residing there, but when you ask what is the nature of the tenure that they occupy land under, you will find that in a nutshell it's oral tenure. This is what we call indigenous tenure. Land, everybody knows this is my land. I farm on it, or I live on it, or there is a school, but there is no documentation. But with the advent of the board on the Moyama land, we have begun a process whereby we interrogate tenure. We harmonize tenure that is in place with the constitution and with the way the government is thinking. So when we took office, we discovered that the only other form of written tenure that was on trust land was what you call permission to occupy. But at that time, also what happened was the government at the time had done away with the law which results in the permission to occupy. With the exception of KwaZulu-Natal, where the what we call the KwaZulu land of Feather of 1992, which still permits a person to get a permission to occupy. It is not for us as the board to say which is the best form of Kenya, but it is also our responsibility in the course of time to advise them. We have made a meaningful input on the communal land like that. The act was passed in Parliament with our significant input. It is a yes, however, to come into operation. We have, through experience, come to the conclusion that the PTO of the permission to occupy are not the viable form of change. And then we will explain a bit more along why. And it is for that reason that we say to encourage and encourage leasehold on our land. Why we say that, we know that we are interim custodians of this land. At the end of the day, the ultimate beneficiary, the regional leader, and other structures of the in place, those are the people that will ultimately decide what is the best for the land for them. And hence, in our view, a leasehold Kenya protects in a way the status quo, but at the same time increase the ability of the land to generate reasonable financial. The board, as a public entity, has a strategic plan. The strategic plan has passed through this committee, as well as the Minister of Justice. That is on page 8 of the report. The basis and the reason for the objectives, the strategic objectives, was to help the board to focus on its function as a statutory entity. On page 9, again, where I need to emphasize, Honorable Chair, is simply the following. Our view as the board from the onset was, if you own land, that is your biggest asset, and therefore you need to develop an asset register. But you cannot achieve that in a shorter space of time as we initially thought. Although our asset register has significantly improved, it will be noted that this exercise cannot be completed until about 300 properties have been transferred from the Department of Land Affairs to the Ingonyama Trust on one hand, and on the other hand, until such time that we as the board have extricated all government land, for want of a better word, which is what we call state domestic purposes as well as county. These 300 properties we are destined to ask by the Department of Land Affairs. It is taking longer than we thought, but the rough estimate of the size of that, of those properties, is just roughly plus minus 500,000 candidates more that need to come to our register. On the other hand, there is still a fair amount of land that needs to be taken out of our register because it belongs to the government. That is the instruction from the Act. The Act states that county must be transferred from the Ingonyama Trust to municipality, and that state domestic property must be transferred to the relevant state county. One of the difficulties in the transfer of county was what is a county? In the last 10 years, we've been debating. Last 8 years ago, we were debating what is a township, because a township colloquially has acquired the meaning to mean a residential area for African people. And a technical definition of a township in conveying to community means any land that is subdivisible legally. And that subdivision is registrable in the legal system. But why we encountered that problem was not of our own making, but it was on the making of some local authorities which were reluctant to accept former African townships because, one, they were not properly planned, two, they were a loss-making arrangement because, as one would know, the African townships were not rateable. So immediately now, you were to transfer a county to what was called a white municipality immediately to improve the infrastructure that you needed and immediately a substantial amount of money to help your sector. And municipality document was the following, maybe rightly so, that land is a national competence, so is housing. So immediately now you transfer land to a local authority without the concomitant budget. That is an unfunded mandate. And therefore they would not be in a position to render equal services as they are ordinarily rendered in the original municipality because the township which has come from Iwanyama Trust has come without the necessary funding. Among others, of course, one must remember, these townships also consisted of single sex hostels which were loss-making, which were meant for migrant labor systems, for African males to move from rural areas to the cities and be kept there. For instance, I remember in one hostel within Durban, where the then MPC related to Makaya told me that the income generated from that hostel was 600,000 rand per annum, and that the municipality was required to spend 2.7 million to maintain the hostel. That is just a hostel. You can think about the road. You can think about any other government property that is there. So what we're saying is, because of those kinds of debates that we've encountered, we haven't finalized the process. But the other problem as well has been that a township per se does not have one single register. This is an amalgam of a number of separate entities which were never consolidated, and that creates some other problems. So in a nutshell then, what I'm saying, Chairperson, is that those challenges will continue to be interrogated by the board, but they will also continue to be the subject of scrutiny of the Auditor General and misunderstanding and so on. Because it could already be detected from what I'm saying that if you immediately incorporate a property which was not subject to rate to an entity which governed by rate, you immediately have problems. In one sense, for us as a board. The Act was amended in 1998. On the 2nd of October, it says all property which the township property vests in the relevant municipality. But municipalities, because they have not taken now transfer now is separate process as opposed to the vesting. That is effectively changing the name who the owner is into the next owner. Until such time, that transfer has taken place. The property in the chief office appears to be our property. And what the municipality does now says, this property is within our area, it must pay rate. And who do they rate? They rate us today. But the property vested with them in 1998. But because changes have not taken place, at face value, we as the Wayama Tribe and municipality rate. But as we sit down, we begin to say, this property has been yours all the time. From the time it became rentable, it was yours. That's what it's based on. And then, I would just make a passing comment as far as land claims are concerned. there are claims on Iwanyama land. They are taking their own hands. We are yet not in a position to form a complete list of the number of claims, but they are not as substantial as we originally thought. But that is a subject of discussion between ourselves and the Commission. But it's not a question of whether claims there is or not, but it is get the necessary information which will justify the transfer of land to the relevant claimant. On page 13, that's where I'm jumping at now. The land identification on the outskirts of the township. By way of example, because of the nature of the pocket of land we have, one would have assumed that every piece of land in Iwanyama Trust owns necessarily belongs to a traditional council, but that is not so. Simply because, among others, part of the land we own were townships, part of the land we own were, but the land which was identified and in transit to the Wazulu government and not necessarily earmarked for a particular traditional council. But our act also allows us in an urban environment, which would otherwise have been a logical extension of the township, that where land is already occupied, used for residential purposes and business purposes, that we are entitled to have that part of land, parcel of land, declared a township. But apart from that, we are entitled to identify areas for development. In Devon, for instance, a joint arrangement between Transnet, which owns land adjacent to us in Mulari Township, approached us for purposes of development of what is today called Umlazi Mega City, where one of these modern shopping malls in the former black areas are. That is one piece of land in terms of our legislation, which was not under the traditional council, but which also upon consideration of the proposal by Transnet, Propnet, the board felt there was a strong case made that it can exercise and focus their property by way of selling. And it was then consolidated by Transnet into an area which has now been developed into one of the few townships in Barcelona. There are other areas which we have identified where similar projects could be established. We have been approached by financial institutions like Grand Mason Bank, First Nation Bank, Liberty Life, as well as Standard Bank Housing, for purposes of meeting their financial charter schedule on time. As far as leasing are concerned, where I need to emphasize on page 14 is the following, is that the board sees real estate management as its major core function, and that during the year, the board continues to encourage development of its land, which will be of benefit to various communities, not only from a rental income point of view, but also through employment and other purposes. What I need to add here, the board does not operate in isolation, but it operates in consultation with the relevant traditional council in place. Because our act is very specific, it says we cannot encumber, pledge, or animate land without a written consent of a traditional council. And therefore, that on itself is a mechanism which kind of supervises the board and forces the board to consult with the traditional council. By the same token, the traditional council cannot alienate land or dispose of land without our consent, even more so because we only carry the taxes with us. Apart from that, what I need to emphasize is the last paragraph, which says today the board has granted some 119 commercial leases, generating 1.67 million rent the Anand by way of income. The current state of affairs as far as this is a concern, if I may say, they sell it now about 150 leases, and hence that's why we say in the forthcoming year we are likely to see an income coming from leases. In fact, it would be more than 2 million rand. At the time we did this projection, it was 2 million rand, but I can confidently say now with the recent discussion we had with the owners of a private game reserve and wines and trust in the northern, but not coast of KwaZulu-Natal, the owners of that private game reserve who recently acquired a professional football club which is called Tanda Royal Zulu, has also proposed to enter into a lease of about 2 farms belonging to the board, which they will manage, the tourism properties joined with the community. Just the rental stream alone that will come from there would be in the order of 1 million rand per annum. Hence, what I'm telling you now, this projection of 2 million would be even more. As far as PTOs are concerned, I won't spend much time face to say the following, Chair and honorable members. After coming to the conclusion that the PTO is not a viable form of tenure, number two, it is not the best source of income because in terms of the statute, a person who occupies land under PTO for residential purposes is not liable for anything. Whereas a person who occupies land for purposes of of running a business, commercial purposes, is only liable to pay 48 rand per annum. Referred that was commercially not viable, and hence, whilst we are not legislators and we could not send anywhere the minister to abolish that act, we just said we would refuse to grant our consent in future that it is issued on land of which effectively means, therefore, that there was a moratorium on PTO. When I look at our agenda now for both EPCO and the board, like I was looking at the agenda for the forthcoming board meeting, hopefully the last one in the year, which is coming this Friday, the 16th, I realize that there is a fair amount of now leases, today commercial or residential, lease application coming through, which is an indication that there is an acceptance of that approach. I do not want, because some of the pages are merely an elaborate of what I've already said. I will not spend time on the registration of land back in trust and consolidation of titles. Those are all suffice it to say that we are mindful of the impending Clara and we are ready when it comes. We know it's not only going to come with some solutions, but it will also present its own problems. But we say we are ready for that, and hence we gear ourselves towards meeting that challenge, in particular by updating our land register, our asset register on one hand, and also there is a new spirit coming to the fore now between ourselves and municipalities, where we begin to see things from at least same angle, and therefore municipalities, because of, among other things, one, the need for land, two, the municipal rate, property rate that some municipalities have already begun a process of land audit, even on our land, which is quite useful because at the end of the day, without information as to what is on land, is very difficult to do. I was listening to some members questioning the previous presenters, and some questioning the view that sometimes if you rely on paper alone without going and do site inspection, you may find that the paper is misleading. I think it's for that reason that, as well, that we find it helpful that the municipalities themselves now will begin to do land audits, because by land audits, One, you begin to know what is on that land, what are the 10 year life that are there, and if there are any issues, what is the best mechanism to resolve those issues. From page 18, we note that during the previous financial year, which is the subject of today's annual report, the income generated from royalties amounted just to over 9 million pounds. It is the board policy that funds generated from various traditional communities be plowed back to those communities, less 10% for administrative costs, but that those communities must come up with business plans to demonstrate to us that the project they have in mind would be a sustainable project. From a sidetrack for a moment, I should refer once more to the April annual report, Chairperson and honorable members. You would note that on page 12 of our annual report with the basket, we took photos of some of the projects that the community have identified and which were funded. The third photo from top, you see that there is a grader on a truck which was being delivered. That grader is Bell Grader, was purchased to the tune of 1.8 million rand by the board on behalf of that community, and in turn that community is now able to contract with the Health Department of Transport for the upgrading of roads. The other projects speak for themselves. There is an art and craft center. There is a policy project at Mandaraji and the community garden as we go along. But we just highlighted these are some of the projects. You will also note, Chairperson, that on page 9, this was not just an experience, but this was one of the visits, site visits by His Majesty and some of the board members, which included myself, Advocate Robin Hannon, Mr. Cruz, and Mr. Aiken there. This is one of the pristine coastal land which is located in the World Heritage Site, which is now called Ismailito Wetland Park Authority, which the board has got plans for better use of. That is just by the way to start. On page 20, I emphasize what I said earlier on about the constraint that one of the downsides of owning land is substantially occupied by beneficiaries in terms of organization is the absence of accurate and adequate records of tenure, particularly by the municipality has been lost. Sometimes applicants still rely quite significantly on oral tradition. You may see a vacant land and think it's unoccupied, it's unencumbered. Meanwhile, spiritually it has already been encumbered for so-and-so, offspring, or whatever. It should take a specific use while that land is not allocated. So we say that is one of the constraints, but nevertheless, the land audit exercise may help us to do that. In conclusion, therefore, Chairperson, I'll be moving now to the qualification of our report by the Auditor General. In that regard, I take the last presentation rather than I will be reading the last document together with the last three pages of the report. It will go hand in hand. The Auditor General, if I may go to the other document other than the annual report, is a document that was circulated this morning. Our view is we always welcome an objective assessment of our performance, irrespective of when it's time. And therefore, we take the qualification by the Auditor General very seriously. And each year, we gauge ourselves against the previous report. In the report under consideration, the Auditor General in his report on the financial statement and performance of Ngonyama staff for the year ended March 2007 raised certain issues. These issues are on page 17, 18, and 19 of the annual report, which is what the basket. So it's page 17, 18, and 19. What does it say there? The Auditor General first says, one out of a sample of 1,296,683.11 hectares selected for testing, the following audit findings were noted. The type bid to support 92,015.90 hectares of land owned could not be obtained for verification. This is just stating facts they are. It does not mean we are failing to manage, but all what the Auditor General is saying. On that day, when he was doing his work, type bid to support this amount of land were not available. There could be reasons for that, but it doesn't matter. He must say that to the fact. If you deal with land, you may find that either the title deed is in the conveyancer because you must transfer the property, or there must be an endorsement for it. Or it might be with a deed office. But at the time, it was not there. Hence, the Auditor General says, you did not prove to me when I visited you that you owed 92,015.90. It doesn't mean we don't own it, but it has put it through at the relevant time. But anybody who takes this message irresponsibly would say we are guilty of maladministration, mismanagement. Not so. The next point is that for 331,050.46 hectares, there were no hectares of land listed on the title. Again, it's taking effect. He says, when you gave me these type deeds, they don't tell you, they represent what happened. What? Is this a problem for the board? We don't create type deeds for certain, but we will explain where, why this is so. And it goes further to say, for 554,114,039 hectares, of land, differences of 10,007 hectares were noted between the land register and hectares reflected on the title deed. In other words, he's now commenting not about our performance, but he's commenting about the nature of the documents we have in our possession. That these documents, this is what they say, we don't make those documents. And hence we have to give it to this committee, because we did reply to the Auditor General, and we believe we owe this committee well the same explanation. This is what our response was. We say the board noted the auditor took a sample of properties, and we say the auditor, as previous years, were provided with a copy of the board's land register. We say the asset register indicates the extending hectares of each property. These extents are recorded by the register of deeds, not us. Except where there are obvious errors on the tax deed or the wind deed extract provided by the register. In such cases, the extent recorded has been taken from relevant survey data approved by the Surveyor General. The differences noted by the Auditor General are mainly due to the incorrect recording of the extent by the register of deeds on tax deed. Therefore, the board cannot use certain type deeds as correct according to the process. But we want to explain this because it's not different than what is sometimes the Department of Home Affairs does. You apply for an ID, you tell them your name, your gender. It comes back, it says you are a female. The person who sees that would be entitled to say, although you are male, but your ID says you are a female. It's stating a fact. But then you answer, yes, that is correct, but that's not my fault. I gave Home Affairs everything, but they still didn't have a problem. So it's the same thing with the police officer. But we go further to explain that the board The ladies of this has acknowledged that they are indeed errors in this report, and the board has appointed a service provider to intervene with the ladies in order to ensure that as accurate as possible accidents are recorded. Furthermore, we say some of the board's title deeds have extent of many thousands of hectares, yet the auditors have merely referred to hectares rather than deeds. Again, let me explain that. It might well be that the 92,000 hectares, which he says he couldn't prove now, is only one piece of land, can only be proven by one type of deed. But it sounds better when you talk about the size of land rather than to say how many types of deeds are missing. We then have to go back to those pieces of land which the auditor generally spoke about, and then we concluded that, in fact, these 92,000 hectares could only be represented by three pieces of type of deeds. Like I say, that is what my comment is. Yeah. But what I'm saying, Chairperson, Honorable Member, we have not tried once to avoid dealing with the issues which are the subject of qualification, but we have tried to explain, not because we want to defend ourselves, but it is really what the audience means. I will not go to each and every detail about land holding, but there is a full explanation, and furthermore, to avoid further problems, we have already indicated that we have appointed the service provider to interact with the deed office. But as would be remembered by some of your members, Chairperson, who were present last year when we did a presentation, what was useful on that presentation was because then the affairs was present, the person in charge of the office, as well as the Survey General Office, was present. They testified these problems. Apart from that, now I will not deal in any greater detail now as far as land holdings are concerned, save to say, Chairperson, over and above that, on page 8, we say we have appointed the services of the conveyancer to take the greatest office to correct the type of deed to reflect the extent shown on the substitution diagram. In other words, some of the type of deed talk a different language, are very old, issued in 1867. It talks about Morgan, not Hector. I myself can confess, I don't know which is bigger between a Morgan and a Hector. But all I can say is that for that reason, what the conveyancer will do will ask for substitution data so that modern techniques of conveyancing could be reflected on those substitutions. I now want to deal with the other basis of qualification. The other basis for qualification relates to permission to occupy. Again, I will not over elaborate on that because what the Auditor General is saying again, the income generated by the people owned does not, it says, I better read exactly the qualification because he concedes that it's not unusual, but I'm not saying therefore it does not mean that it must necessarily be done. But it has previously reported and in common with similar organizations, it has not been feasible for Nyonyama Transport to institute control over mineral extraction. It says to date the following matters had not been addressed to confirm the completeness of income. There has been no process for the collection of general income from permissions of funds. The PTO income received was not matched to the respective PTO order. Auditor General is correct. He must also admit that that is a problem which is sometimes to be addressed. Why is that so? We don't have a register of all the PTOs because we were not issuing the originally, the PTOs were issued by the national government in Victoria and subsequently by the Department of Traditional Affairs. And in latter years, the Department of Traditional Affairs has been working closer with us in the issue of PTOs. But nevertheless, because of this historical background, we cannot have an aid complete and accurate record. But by chance, what does happen is that officials in the Department of Local Government and Traditional Affairs, they would advise the holder of the PCPOM and give that individual our account number. And those people will pay directly to us without us being able to identify who it is. So that is a problem which we cannot undertake, that it shall be solved by next year. It takes a certain amount of time. Then coming back to the issue then of royalty income, what the Auditor General was saying here, one can say it's even over strict, if not overly pedantic, because it has previously reported, and in common with similar organizations, it has not been seized for Ingonyama Transport control over mineral extraction. What that means is that mineral extraction starts from anything from titanium to gold. We've got coal on our land. We also have land, sanguine. We cannot have the capacity to guard each and every river and see how many tonnage each and every supplier is collecting. Neither can we be in each and every mining house and supervise exactly that, this is the quantity of coal they are extracting. And the Auditor General is correct then to say it is not feasible. But as a double mechanism, we also ask for a certificate from the auditors of one of our mining houses, which pay royalties to us. And what the Auditor General said is that a letter to support 88% of the total royalty was received from the holding company of Zulu and Sprite Scholarly. But he said, however, I'm unable to place reliance thereon, as it was not audited by the company's external auditor. First, we did not know what would satisfy the Auditor General, because we had a similar comment previous year. But he said, this year let's go one step further. Let's go to the auditors of this company to confirm that this, what we have been saying is what we should have been saying. Now, the Auditor General takes it a step further. If particularly an external auditor would have accepted, but because this is an internal auditor, I'm still not happy. But we have now, subsequent to that, gone back to the company to say, we now require your external auditor to be on time, so that we can satisfy the Auditor General. I would not talk about matters of emphasis. Members of this committee who have been here for some time would recall that some of the matters were previously matters basis for qualification. They have subsequently been sort of given a lighter emphasis than before. Suffice it to say that as far as the alleged race liability with the Tebele municipality is concerned, that process is on hand. The latest correspondence I have from the mediator who was appointed in terms of the Intergovernmental Relations Act is dated the 26th of October, and Advocate Stewart has this to say. He says, in view of what is set out in the email, I have held back on preparing my report in order to give the Tebele municipality better time to deal with the outstanding issue. In other words, the ball is not necessarily in our court, but we put our case to him. The claimant of the race now needs more time. But the mediator goes further to say, it must be said, though, that more than enough time has now passed. I will be away from chambers on work elsewhere in the country for the next 2 weeks. On my return, or as soon thereafter, as I can get to it, I will prepare my report. If I have not heard from the Tebele municipality on those issues by then, my report will record as much. That is insofar as it relates to the contingent rate liabilities. As far as internal controls are concerned, Chairperson, our response appears on page 18. As far as organogram is concerned, the auditor general wants more, is correct. We've got 50% vacancy. We have since been allocated adequate office space. We have from the 1st of November 2007, where in those vacancies will be filled. You talk about strategic plan, policies and procedures. Currently, those policies here specifically referred to have already received the attention of EFSCO, and they will be tabled to the board for consideration in the forthcoming board meeting on the 16th. I must, however, I had the opportunity to go back to the previous report as far as what else did the Auditor General say in the previous year about policies. This is in order to clarify once and for all to this board that we don't get criticized and make promises and don't keep up with. My reading of the previous financial report of what the Auditor General said about policies is none of this. All he said was the following. No documented policies and procedures, brackets, except for the credit control policy to ensure that the correct processes are followed for activities performed in all cycles, thus increasing the risk of fraud and error. And then he mentioned what were those documents. He said, no documented fraud prevention plan to prevent and detect fraud and to mitigate specific fraud risks. No measures in place to identify and record parties related to the entity, whatever it meant. No risk management policy. The leave records were not updated regularly or signed and previously. Those were the basis of the qualification as far as policies were concerned in the previous year. It would be noted that the matter of safety strikes that the Auditor General makes no comments on this in the last financial year. Chairperson, thank you very much. Whatever I shall have left, I would ask my colleague to complete that. Mr. Brooks is sitting next to me. I will ask him to conclude on the financial performance and other progresses. And in the course of our interface with your members, my other colleagues will have the opportunity to still up the gap where I think. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Moreno. Members, three is ready. It's in 2 minutes past 11. Just come back by half past 11. 8 minutes to break. And we can take your questions and comments. I'll take it when we come back.
I'm going to go to the next one. My thanks for the presentation of the board of the Bolivian Church and of the Majesty of the Clinica de Cusum. Sir, my first question relates to the comment which was made by done in relation to the definition of the terms. If I heard him correctly, he's saying that for the past 8 years, we've been debating this question, and it seems to me, if I'm correct, that there is no solution in sight to understand what is the terms. If, therefore, I'm correct, I'll raise that as a problem, because if you look at the previous statistics report, they were supposed to have transferred, if I'm correct, in terms of the strategic plan, 6 townships. If I'm correct again, only 2 that have been transferred in terms of the strategic plan. Which I then really need some clarity on that. And of course, if I may refer to the annual report on page 4, On page 4, we relate to the objective, that's what I can find, of the trust. It talks about the last bullet point, to extend the city of Turner in accordance with the last post of day. My focus will be of the extension of the city of Turner. If therefore that is correct, I see in terms of the report, annual report, there is a concern as far as page 10 is concerned under paragraph 8.11, granting of leases. If you look at your right-hand side of that page, that's on top of there, the board does not usually agree to the sale of land as this could have the effect of diminishing the area of land in black ownership, black ownership. I'm reading that sentence in terms of the last bullet point of the objective. Maybe I just need to be educated there in terms of the security of tenure and in terms of the board is not usually agreed to as right. I don't want to repeat that particular issue. The other question, Chair, is on page 21. If I may quickly go to page 21 of the annual report, I heard what the judge said in terms of the previous report as far as the procedures and policies are concerned. But when I was listening to him in terms of the listing of the procedures and policies, he does not differ much in terms of the understanding of the procedures referred to in this particular audit finding, which I will therefore need a clarity in terms of the auditor commented that although the board has a solid plan in place, it does not have established policies and procedures. It may be a different terminology in terms of the writing of the report. But if I had him in terms of reading that paragraph from the previous report, it does refer also to the policies and procedures of the trust. I don't want to read the whole paragraph there, which is a concern, which I want us to address, for them to address us in terms of that particular concern. The page 20 on this attainment issue. This attainment issue has been coming up for some time now. I hear the judge in terms of the document that has been circulated this morning as referred to. In terms of their response to AG in relation to that particular issue. As much as they are saying the last sentence of that paragraph, as I read it about 2 minutes ago, he talks about their view is to refer this matter, of course, to court for the declaration order. Which I think, if that is their view, it was the same statement that they gave us in the last financial annual report. If I remember correctly, we were at that time, we were at the NCOP site. I think it was S35, if I'm correct, where that issue was raised in terms of the view of the board. And I hope that the board should say now have told us to say, in our view, in terms of what you have suggested then, this is a proper process made. But of course, if you look at the explanation, they are referring to say that this is still being undertaken in terms of the mediation and other issues. The last issue, Chairperson, restitution. If I remember, I hear very well, I say there are claims which have been claimed in terms of the land as referred to here. But say that they are still looking in terms of the classification of that particular land. I don't know, Chair, because if I go back to objectives again, the table of terms, it does link with that, because I believe that, if I'm correct again, that the board has of the view that the land that now is referred to the trust is owned by what you call the black. Then, therefore, they don't see any logic of the restitution in the land owned by whatever. Because the view is that you are taking a land from the black to a black, whatever this may be. And I want you to go into deeper with that approach, if I understand again here. Because you need to go back to the history, how that land was acquired. I think the judge has indicated in terms of how the history of this particular piece of land. I'm looking at the map here. I don't know if you've seen this map, but this one here, of course, from page, it doesn't have a page. The Rheumatoid Board land. It's a vast, and I said, 2.5 million hectares, whatever. It's a vast land. Maybe they have just to clarify for us. When you talk about here, it's a Queen, Devon, Kwadukuza, and the Richard Bay, and all those things, are all these areas that are referred to here, sort of part of the trust, as this message is concerned. But you see also the Peter Marister, somehow there, which really, the whole Kwadukuza comes, in sort of, you know. I don't know what the impact that is going to have, because Clara, although the land affairs is really delayed, Clara. Because Clara should have been ready implemented a long time ago, you see. The last issue is about the state forest, the privatization of the state forest. It seems to me there is no progress there. I just want to know in terms of the board, if they can tell us why they have not achieved that target that they have set themselves in terms of the privatization of those pieces of land, you see. So that you get an understanding and a clear exactly the situation there. Did you register? If you look at what they have said and also the document that is circulated now, I wonder if the AG has not said to them, listen guys, there's this issue that's a question mark, there's this issue that's a question mark. Why only now they're instructing their conveyancers, you see, to register and to correct and to amend certain deeds sort of registration in terms of these pieces of land? Because if you look at this document that is circulated now, from page 4 to page 10, this is what they are saying, that they instructed their conveyancers to rectify it. Which means if the AG has not drawn their attention in terms of the special issues, that the conveyancers issue will not have been instructed. That if I'm correct in that analysis, because it is only now that is the conservative instructed to rectify the situation. Why they took so long to rectify the situation in terms of this pieces of land so that we know exactly who is who and where is where. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I don't know what case is this now. Is the heading raised the use and the development of trust land. You say here the board is happy to encourage development but has a policy not to alienate or sell land except in exceptional circumstances. Like what? Can you just identify to us what you mean by exceptional circumstances? Secondly, in relation to that, what happens if government builds a school, clinic, hospital in the very same land? Do you treat that as exceptional circumstances? Maybe if we can get clarity on that. And lastly, Chairperson, on it's written on top of the page 10, it says the granting of leases. The second bullet says, as previously noted, the board prefers to enter into lease for the use of trust land. In so doing, it endeavors to obtain the best deal for the relevant affected communities. And then you continue to say, ownership thus remains with the trust for the ultimate transfer to the beneficiaries. To be identified in due course. Now, my question would be, how do you identify this beneficiary? And this is the trust land. What do you mean by transfer of that very transfer, the trust land to whoever you will identify as the beneficiary? How do you do that? If you can just clarify this to us, whether I don't understand it properly, but I'm a little bit confused what you mean by transferring the past land to the beneficiary to be identified in due course in terms of the provision of the Communal Land Rights Act. You mean that when the Communal Land Rights Act starts to function, then there will be those who will be identified as beneficiaries? I don't know if you can just clarify that for me. And lastly, Ogushali has asked this question, but I was just going to say, how do you resolve such claims? Because you talk about regional land claims committed to resolve such claims in order that the trust can perform its function as land owner in land, in law. Now, I don't know. If the land is within the land, within the trust land, the land that is owned by the trust, how do you then resolve the claims within that land? If I can just get clarity on this land claim issue that we have mentioned here. All right, I'll leave the other. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I'm sorry I was outside when somebody can only ask questions. Maybe he's asked certain things, but if he asks, then you can pull me out of order. But firstly, just to thank the Honourable Judge and his team for the presentation. In fact, there were a number of questions that I had noted, but I see the answers were given in the presentation. But there are just a few areas of concern, and one is this whole thing about the Municipal Property Rates Act and the impact it's going to have on the board and its finances. And I think I had colleague Lali talk about Tegwing as I came in, and the 25 million rand outstanding in grade. I mean, just now when the act is implemented throughout, and there's a date of implementation for that, I mean, what is going to happen? And earlier on, I think the Honourable Judge did indicate that the last time the Surveyor General Land Affairs officials were present when you made your presentation. Maybe, Chair, we should be looking at local governments and all of us getting together. Because we can't, as you said, allow this just to be reported on every year. And the auditor picks on it and we just, you know, it's a never-ending story. So maybe at some time we really need to get to grips with this question of rates. Secondly, the vacancies. See, there's only 50%. You've only got 50% of your staff. And surely no organization is going to function effectively with just half the number of people that you have. What are you going to do about employing more people? The other question I want to ask is on projects. I see that you've got four projects here with pictures. But I don't want to believe that there were only four projects funded during the day. I'm sure there were many others. These were just samples. But what is of concern is the fact that certain traditional authorities, you said you've got money, and they're not taking up this funding, or they're not coming up with projects. Is there any training in this regard? Is there any discussion with the houses of traditional leaders or the things like that to encourage them to draw up business plans? Is there any initiation from the side of the Ngonyama Trust Board, for example, to help them with developing projects? And the last question is, you know, almost 2.5 million hectares of land is under the guardianship or custodianship of the Ngonyama Trust. And, you know, there are a number of projects where people come, they want to enter into partnerships with communities. Is the board thinking of identifying, together with the Department of Agriculture, land use in this particular area, because some of them are prime residential areas, some of them are prime areas for tourist development, where those communities can benefit from becoming shareholders in tourism projects and things like that. So is there any initiation from the side of the board to kickstart these kinds of developments and get a debate going amongst all the role players? Thank you.
Thank you.
They are not responsible for issuing permission to occupy. So Bona in church they will be giving a list in the meantime. Which rather new list. How long will it be will it be the whole will it be issued for the beneficiary? And if anything happens to the in-law, like Clara, are they going to change the lease? And what will happen? To ask if a real benefit, but we're sitting uncertain about our future. So we don't really know what is the government going to come up with. So the number even if you give them the lease, if something turns around, what will happen to the lease? Thank you, sir. And thank you for the presentation. While one was listening at the presentation, I'm not that very old in the community. I also am taking myself to be a new man. But while listening at the input, my understanding is that the Ingonyama Trust land is an indigenous area for a particular indigenous grouping. And then while looking at it, it is situated within the within the coastal area. So my question, part of it has been asked the Honorable Member from the Stompon, that it seems that land is not sold and so on. Do we not have any part there in the coastal area which maybe might be occupied by foreigners? Why? So, if maybe we do have, how do they relate to that? This has been said that the land is not sold to outsiders. And then, secondly, the question is on the question of the mortgage and headcount. Some of the issues can be solved, in a week's time, but we find them taking a very long period. Don't we have people who know exactly what a Morgan is and convert the whole thing for headcount, and then we talk about headcount. And then, lastly, on the qualifications that were raised by the Auditor General, it's to me it appears that some of the issues the board can make an appointment with the Auditor General and iron out some of the issues. For instance, I would like to raise the question of the 92,000 hectares of land, which only when one goes through the annual report, it's only few a member who did not provide the title deed. Such things were supposed to be ironed out. They are minor issues, before they get into the report as qualified people. Thank you, Professor. Yeah.
this question is raised by Amkuna about the land that you own and the disposal mechanism. Can you perhaps just unpack that part if there are any mechanisms of disposal and if you dispose land, what mechanisms do you follow? That is in addition to the element on foreign land ownership.
Thank you, Chair. If you look at the map on the board there, the green part and the white part, am I correct to say the white part is occupied mainly by white? And am I correct also to say it is the bigger of the portion of land in the top and so forth like that, which would mean then that the blacks are in occupation of a smaller piece of land than the other population. And if I may go to the question of the Kenya form, land Kenya form, like leases and statues and stones, you told us that you are not in favor of the change of land. One way of facilitating space for alienation of land would be the other form, like freehold. Now, why is it that you come out against the sale of this land belonging to this community? Which of these forms, in other words, benefit these people in terms of their continued ownership of their land? Is it leasehold or is it space or is it PTO? If you can just, because this is a debate that is ongoing, it has never been resolved in reality. And we are in a good position as the board to know which of these forms would benefit the African community that are in the position of this particular piece of land. And if I may go on, under registration of land vesting in trust and consolidation of titles, you mentioned that there are 300 parcels that should have been transferred to the board, which have not yet been transferred. Land that should have been transferred, I think, even before 1994. Now, what kind of land is this? What's happening on this this land? Who is in occupation of this land that has not yet been transferred? And that is that kind of disbursement of funds to traditional beneficiaries. You say during the year the number of settled councils qualifying for funding total 29. What are the criteria that has been met?
Thank you, Jim. It seems that the implementation of FLARA is important to the board, and the board is still awaits the publication of the draft or the regulations and the commencement date of the Act. Now, is there any communication between the board and the Department of Land Affairs on this issue? And then, Chair, it is about 8 years since the closing date for restitution. But the board is still waiting for full detail on claims on trust land. Now, what is the problem? Thank you, Chair.
What I'm thinking, it will be possible for me to bear truth and allow my certificate to go free and take it from there. what is that response, after which is the true response, and they'll bring me to the night time.
I don't want to represent you now. Honorable Thompson, question?
Yeah.
You can respond.
Thank you, sir. I think these questions are very useful, but my responsibility to respond, of course, between me and my colleagues. But first, I just want to make one general observation, because there is a theme which I understand is troubling the members of this committee, and understandably, because the whole country is looking upon you for purposes of what is the best mechanism to manage them. But we can also say that, by the same token, I think we are the only committee that will stop closing its land in the whole country. That is the case. And thirdly, we wish to say that not only do we have an open communication with MFS, but some of the ideas we get from us, because some of the consultants we use are the consultants that work with us. And through that, we are able to get some amount of our views. I know right now that the first draft regulation is a part from the part for our own comments and we've made a comment. So there is that question to know what it is. And recently, for instance, because the world is looking at South Africa, when the state president gave the State of the Nation, the Canadian government immediately was interested in communal land rights act when it came into operation, because the president said it will be implemented this year. So some students from one of the Canadian universities were then sent to South Africa under the understanding that communal land rights is now operational, only to find that it was not operational. But land affairs said the first institution we can go in land goes towards the Natal and work with Guanyamatal. And we're able to work with those students. They returned there sometime in October. So it's not that when we present our report, we talk from an ivory tower. We know some of the problems. But also what I want to say as a general comment is that land is one of the best resources. The other day, I made a presentation to the provincial cabinet, and the premier asked me whether is it possible to have a mini Royal Bafokeng in KwaZulu-Natal. I told him, I said, Royal Bafokeng is nothing compared to your own land. Why I'm saying that is, if anybody does a study of land tenure in the world, you will find, for instance, that
20 years ago, I'm sure that around this table, nobody knew of a place called Dubai. Dubai is not popular for oil. It doesn't have oil. Oil is only 35 days away in Abu Dhabi. But the revenue stream in Dubai comes from real estate management. But in Dubai, there is no freehold. Again, anybody who knows Hong Kong. Hong Kong was under a 99-year lease to Britain. It developed under 99 years. It was only returned recently. Having developed as a city, if not a mini state, to what it is, no freehold. With every kind of land. So what I'm saying is, in South Africa, we tend to be sort of very clogged with land ownership in terms of freehold. I can understand because we don't have comparative experience. But the little experience we have, if you could start from 1994 to now, and look how many people are given freehold land and how many have lost. Not only in rural areas, but also in urban, with government grant housing. We hear people having sold their houses for 10 grand, 100 grand. As soon as a person has got unfitted discretion, sometimes there is a problem. But that's not necessarily what informs us. What informs us is the following. You would notice that in the last page of our annual report, these are the prescribed beneficiaries already. We hold this land, but not for ourselves. So we're always cautious that if you hold land on behalf of somebody, if I may give an example, if today I die, I leave a child of 10 years, that I bequeath my house to him or her. The master of the High Court will never allow you to sell that house until that child is 21 to make that decision himself or herself. We say the people who must make a decision about their land are the real owners, whether they want to sell or not. On a 99-year lease, I think in the earlier presentation, for instance, there was a question asked to a gentleman, Mr. Malachi, about their lease, and he talked about 9 years, 11 months. That's correct. That is what we call a short-term lease. A short-term lease, the maximum of a short-term lease is 9 years, 11 months. Anything more than that is called a long-term lease. A long-term lease is registered in a lease office. So it gives you full protection like an owner. Because you may find that an owner sometimes has got lesser rights than a person who has some right on his or her land, depending on what rights those are. So when we say we sell land only under exceptional circumstances, and the question was, can we elaborate what are those exceptional circumstances? It's true. One, there is what we can call nuisance land for us, maybe to manage. We find that that land is not occupied, but it gets squatted upon, but squatting would not be the best use of that land. Whereas if you sell it, it gets developed, you get the best premium for that. Then you say, the best thing rather than me creating a potential for squatting is to sell that land and get the best premium. Just to give an example, in my presentation, I talked about Mega City, which is not different to the Maponya Mall in Soweto. I said we sold a portion of that land to Transnet, who in turn consolidated it with their land and developed that mall. Why did we sell it? First, it's close to the river. Secondly, squatting was developing in that area. Thirdly, we could not manage that land. We would have been spending more money to manage that land without generating income from that resource. But that is not the only criteria. It might well be that in our determination, we say the best use of this coastal land is to sell it. You would notice, for instance, like I pointed out, I think it was page 9, on the annual report, that is a pristine area of what is called 10 Mile Beach, where we were. That's 9 Mile Beach, I'm sorry, I'm not sure what I'm saying, 10 Mile Beach. is unoccupied with only World Heritage Park. Our thinking for the purposes of that land may well be that this is one piece of land that you can get the best income. So when we say our preferred route is lease as opposed to selling, we are mindful of a number of things. One thing is, I think members sitting here, they sit on a piece of legislation which they have not thought of amending. We've got subdivision of agricultural land. That's number 70 of the legislation. That adds, before you can cut any piece of land in Paris, you need a minister's consent. You can wait for 10 years sometimes. So, it would defeat the very purpose of what you're trying to achieve. It's a constraint itself to try and sell land, which by law you must get all the regulations through. Whereas to circumvent that red tape, a leasehold to us, a long-term lease, because one of the questions was, how long is the lease? Our lease is 40 years, renewable by another 40 years. So it's 8 years. But the lease is inheritable as well, like any job. The question about the PTO, it is true that there are a number of problems with PTO. Because the PTO, for instance, is not registered anywhere. Somebody can have a PTO now and still enter into a lease with somebody else. And you've got a clash of rights immediately. Somebody says about the lease, you've got a PTO go. I remember some years back in, that was in charge of the tax event, there was that problem. Where the traditional authority has allocated at least one association, another association, and the PTO, the matter to go to, because they're all sorts of things and so on. So, in a nutshell, we agree that the best way, sometimes of ownership, or of land rights, would be freehold rights. But we are also mindful of the practicality that some members may say, taking 10 years. 10 years is nothing. If you look, we're talking 13 years. We haven't been able to fill the vacuum. I only saw recently that the Blair administration has been abolished finally this month. But they do abolish all these previous racist legislation. You are not passing immediate legislation to replace them, and you create vacuum. What is happening is there are a number of state funds, which I know for a fact, that they belong to the government, but they are not being looked after because there is no mechanism in place. Then there could be schools, there could be reformatories, the old reformatories, for instance, they are all over. There is not even a budget for that. So what we are saying is, from our own point of view, as far as all these things are concerned, we acknowledge our capacity that we are not late takers. We can do the best with what we have in place right now. But I think there is also a misconception that Clara will come and solve everybody's problem. Clara talks about the old order right and new order right. But what is a new order right? It doesn't define it. It's a right which means a new order. In other words, the minister, you can go to the minister and say, Minister, I've got a lease. You can hold order right. I want you to make it a new order right. And he says, yes, this is an old order right. I'm giving it back to you now. It's a new order right. It's a simple and basic understanding to simplify it. It doesn't define anything more than that. So what we are saying is, for sure, a PTO will always have problems because it's not acceptable by financial institutions, but it is a long-term lease is acceptable by all credible institutions because institutions are working even internationally. Your international investors are very familiar and aware of long-term leases. Even here in South Africa, Soweto was subject of 1990 for many years, and people were able to build houses. They were able to bond in 1998. You are able to transfer your 99 yen to somebody else and sell it, but not in this matter. So I'm saying these are just general comments. But maybe share thing that Mr. Larry is out for now. I won't give you his questions until he's back, but maybe I think I've tried to answer the question by Mamzuli as far as the question of exceptional circumstances are concerned. We say the first try for us go to a lease on a communal land for simple reason that once it retains the character of the land where people still live communally, particularly where people are still their lifestyle is traditional. Like for instance, what you will find is that in a traditional setup, you've got your residential and wealthy funds, and those things can be changed. Rather than going freehold, our view is you can transplant your sectional type setup in a block of land in the form of leases and say, these people have got these rights and these are common rights. More so if one takes into account the Municipal Property Rights Act is raising now everybody. In fact, not that it is about to come. It has started already. We are making it. We have made an input, and our input has been that for now have a zero rating, basically, except it is for commercial purposes. The government has not made an input despite that creation effort. And therefore, they say whatever in Goyama Trust is playing, land affairs are crazy. Because land affairs own more land than us, but they have not taken it upon themselves to make an input on rating. So that is the situation. As far as the granting of leases is concerned, the question was, how do we identify the beneficiary? One, they are prescribed to us by the nation. That they are in the last place. Number two, SARA is coming with a slight modification of that. So we don't want to be in a situation where we take a decision now only to be reversed as soon as SARA is in place. We want these SARA committees, like the Land Rights Board, to be in place first before we can say these are the final beneficiaries, and therefore, in the process of SARA, instead of every land being owned by the Goyama Trust, we now say the title deed now must be cascaded to that community. In other words, we transfer the land to community B, they become the owners as opposed to the Goyama Trust. Of course, we still own a residual of land which does not have a beneficiary. Otherwise, from us, a beneficiary who is not prescribed yet could be anybody who comes with the best premium. In other words, in terms of premium. I may just indicate, for instance, that there are many international investors that are approaching us. We've got many people from Dubai, in particular, who come and say, what are the land issues in South Africa? Can we develop? We've got, for instance, people who want to spend $2 billion to come and develop. But they are quite familiar with the lease code because they say in Dubai there's nothing like people. They've never seen it. But they are the people who have put up some hotels on the sea under 99-year lease. Because what happens is, if you're going to develop any land, at the very best, you need 20 years to pay back the bank. Then, in terms of our lease, your 20 years, your next 20 years is your honeymoon, you're making a profit. You've got another 40 years to make more money. But the fundamental question is, if at the end of your lease, you leave, that community which owned land which was 1,000 rand, maybe worth 1 million rand, and a good stream of income. So that is where we are coming from. The impact of the municipal property rate, Mr. Singh is correct, does have an impact. But what I would suggest to board members, to committee members, is also to read the app on their own and they realize how complicated the app is as opposed to people. But because we have taken a collective stand, our view, like I said, is the local government, which is responsible for advising municipalities in the province, is working closer with us. Maybe because it's a close case you have of that. But that was the relationship that we are designing a scheme that will ultimately work for both sides. But it, however, does not mean that at the end of the day, we shall not be liable for it. But in our view, from the formula that we have agreed upon, we would be liable for those rates which are self-funded. Because we pass over, in terms of our lease agreement, our tenant undertakes to pay the rate. We did that even before this exchange operation. So as a result, therefore, all those commercial properties which are the subject of lease with us, we don't have a problem. But now, the tenant. Tenant will pay the rate to the municipality. Yes. We get the rent. He will still pay us our rent. And that rent will still go back to the community. That's how it is. As I'm talking, yes, there is a proposal by Ron mentioned them, where they want to open another shopping mall in Hammersmith, but also they want to develop houses. The view of the board is that that spot which has been identified is a natural development of the township, is not occupied. So the board would be keen to look at the freehold for purposes of housing, but not for purposes of commercial. For commercial, it would still be the subject of the lease for 4 years. That income goes to the community. Already, on our short-term lease alone, they have agreed to pay between 60,000 and 65,000 rand per annum. In a property where we are getting nothing for now, the line policy. So what we are saying is, once the community, once Clara says, Ngonyama, you can go now, you're done your job. We are creating a structure where the community can be able to work and continue generating income. But if they want to serve, it's up to them. And then the question then of projects and business plan by communities and the question was also that there are 29 people identified, communities, and what is our criteria. Our criteria is very simple. We say where the source of income is, that community automatically is a beneficiary. If there is a shopping mall in community A, all the rental that is generated from there, less 10%, that community is a beneficiary. They must give us a business plan and tell them how much. If there's a mining housing community B, we say we generated 2 million rand from royalties, give us a business plan. That's how we went. For purposes of what we do. But in some areas, we may find that there's no income generation, but we foresee that they've got a pristine land which can generate money, but it needs to be worked on. By working on, I mean in terms of planning, where you need survey work and so on, where you need professional work. The board is keen to commit its funds to the professional team so that the land is more viable and then it can be sold. The other question by Mr. Singh was whether there are plans for community equity and partnership and so on. Yes, it's true. What we do is, to give an example, our model. If you come, you say you want to put up a shopping mall for 200 million. You say yes. We give that to you on a lease basis for 4 years. But you must also have an equity partner. despite the fact that you're going to spend that money, you might have an equity partner, and that equity partner must be from local. And the same traditional council, in other words, has got the potential of being a co-owner of the company which runs the shopping mall. At the same time, it is the ultimate owner, if you like. One formula we have, for instance, which we're discussing, we're in a situation where Rand Mutual Bank put up a company which is 70% owner and the community is giving us 30% to allocate it from there. So that is the formula we're having as well. So the community will be able, by way of dividends, to get income as well as by way of income. And ultimately the whole ownership question. And also Mr. Singh's question revolved around the 50% vacant on the cafeteria. It would be noted, not as an estimate, but all the work here, you would note that the organogram is a simple. One compared to the previous presenters here, you look at their subcomplement of 33. Output you can make a fair comparison of what we are saying. Our constraint was dictated by the absence of space, because all the years we've been dependent on the land affairs allocation of space. But the rules have now been amended to allow us to look for accommodation wherever we want to. And for that reason, we have already taken off the space, but it will take some time for us to take the space. But in the interim, we'll be back on the